Agricultural programs are made possible with support from Cargill, featuring ProPricing Grain Contracts, a marketing program providing a variety of contracts designed to fit a farmer's performance goals and risk tolerance. Information on the web at CargillProPricing.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's October the 1st, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the debate over direct payments is heating up in D.C. USDA says no to an early release of CRP acres. And ethanol demand is having an impact on the price of food. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour, and then I'll tell you how to plug your own numbers into the FarmDoc website. Well, okay, a downloadable spreadsheet from the FarmDoc website that can help you decide which version of the Farm Bill commodity title being debated by the Senate might be best. And don't forget, just after the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, wheat futures finished 13.5 cents higher for the nearby December contract at $9.52.5. The March at $9.60.5, up 13.5 as well. December corn down 4.25 at $3.68.75. The March futures down 3.75, $3.85.5 the settlement price. May corn at $3.95, down 4.25 in December. $4.15.5, down 4 cents. November soybeans now, $9.91.5, up 1 quarter. January futures a penny higher at $10.09.5. And the March contract at $10.20.25, up 2. November beans next year at $9.68, 4 cents higher. October bean meal up $2.50 at $278.80. October bean oil down 44 at $39.05. Live cattle October from the Mercantile Exchange, $96.22.5, down 72.5. December's down $1.20 at $98.60. October feeder cattle, $115.75, $1.22.5 lower. In November's down $1.67.5 at $114.95. October lean hogs at $58.15. Down 75 for the afternoon, and the outside markets trading the crude oil at $80.25 at this hour, down $1.41. The Dow now at 14,107 is up just about 212 points for the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on a Monday afternoon is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
So do we want to talk about the Dow to begin with, or something from the Mercantile Exchange or the Board of Trade?
Well, the Dow is just phenomenal. We've seen confidence come back into the marketplace. Several economic numbers being positive, but the main psychology has done a complete 180 since August 16th. Fallout, we've seen some ideas now that maybe the crisis in the credit situation, maybe the worst part is bypassed us now, that the economic situation can move forward. So it's nice to see some consumer confidence, investor confidence come back into the marketplace.
The U.S. dollar is still fairly low, 77.914. It's up 0.217 at this hour. What do you make of it all?
Well, weakness of the dollar continues to be good for our exports. It keeps us competitive. If you look at the yen corn chart and some of these other countries compared to ours, even with the high price of corn, we're not historically high by all means when you look at the currency rate ratio there. So it keeps our market in a competitive situation, especially when you look at tight global stocks of corn and tight global stocks of wheat. It's encouraging. In fact, you've got Egypt in the wheat market here overnight. They're in for their standard announcement of 55,000 to 60,000 metric tons. We expect that to be much larger than that when it's all said and done of Egypt purchasing U.S. wheat. But the weak dollar, too, from the standpoint of anything here in the U.S. that looks attractive to a foreigner, it's a big buy. It's a good buy. The fact that they wanted to invest in the Dow, their currency is a lot stronger than ours, so they get more purchasing power bang for the dollar. Interesting point, though, not to sidetrack here, but I talked to one individual, went to Paris, France, on vacation there, and they bought a bottle of Coke, and I think it was like $8.
Well, that has a lot of fructose in it, I suppose. Oh, okay. So turn your attention then to what's been happening in the corn and the soybean markets, and maybe we ought to start with what the expectations are for the crop progress report this afternoon.
Well, harvest progress is going to make huge leaps again, especially in the south. Harvest progress is expected to be in this, for corn and beans, both about in this 30 to 40% area, 35% complete. Conditions are expected to improve slightly on corn due to the better yields. The northern region, you take northern Illinois into Wisconsin, into northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, they continue to be hampered for a little wetter forecast, so that crop's going to be slow to come out. But the state breakdown's definitely going to show the southern portions with the best progress thus far. Some producers done, and even wrapping up some wheat sowings. Wheat's expected to be about 45% complete.
What are farmers asking you most often when they call today?
Do I store or do I sell?
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one. I mean, Jiminy Frost, anybody that's been in the business over time, scratching your head, these prices are historically high. And if you got some good yields, it's windfall return. And especially for guys got a bin, simple psychology is to fill that bin, and so it's a tough decision, and that varies from individual to individual. We'll recommend do a little bit of both, store some, take advantage of some improving basis going into at least December. After December, we feel basis is going to fall apart, so if you are going to fill a bin, we target or mark the calendar 1st of December to be unloading that. If you're needing some cash flow, it's an excellent opportunity to move it and replace it on paper. We've got several option strategies where you can come in and replace it on paper. That way, if the market goes higher, you're on board. If not, you're out only exactly, what you pay for those options. So it's an interesting time of the year, a lot of conversation, a lot of pencil pushing. But the main event probably will be the October crop report. As we get closer to that, we'll start to see some private estimates. The fear is that with these better than expected yields, we'll see a higher corn number, and with the bean yields so-so, that could still be out for the jury. One other observation, oftentimes you see maybe a little bit of an acre adjustment here on this October crop report, so there's going to be a lot of motion and probably a lot of volatility pickup going into that report, Todd.
Kurt, we appreciate you being with us today.
Very good.
Thank you much. Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to cooley@admworld.com.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy. It's short from Ed Kieser this afternoon. He says, across the two-state region, tonight clear to partly cloudy, with patchy dense fog forming. Lows will range between 54 and 60. Dave Dickey is here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the debate over direct payments continues to smolder. Senate Budget Chair Kent Conrad says while all members of the Agriculture Committee agree it would be best not to cut direct payments, finances are extremely tight. In Conrad's words, most people would say modest savings of 4 to 5% out of direct payments when prices are high and there is protection when yields are below average is something that most people could live with. Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin's spokeswoman Kate Cyril says Harkin's call for a $4.5 billion cut in direct payments is open to discussion.
The $4.5 billion cut in direct payments that the chairman used in his scenario, that's all very fluid. That was one number. That's a number he'd prefer. But certainly in our negotiations, as we go forward in this process, that is subject to change. I would like to remind folks, though, where these payments came from. Remember, direct payments came out of the 1996 Freedom to Farm Act. A lot has changed since then. In fact, these payments were supposed to be temporary. They were supposed to expire. Instead, they were extended.
Senate Finance Chairman Max Baucus has scheduled a Wednesday markup session for the tax-related items and budget offsets. His panel will provide the Agriculture Committee for the Farm Bill. Baucus reportedly may offer a proposal in the markup that would require some foreigners working in the U.S. to pay Social Security taxes to help create a permanent agriculture disaster relief fund. Baucus is also considering a 5-cent cut in the 51-cent ethanol tax credit. The markup potentially opens the door for the Senate Agriculture Committee to mark up the full farm bill before recessing for a week this Friday. USDA says it will not offer early release of cropland from the Long-Term Conservation Reserve Program. USDA Acting Secretary Chuck Connor made the announcement on Friday, saying U.S. grain supplies will be adequate without early release. In a written statement, Connor said high market prices are providing incentives to plant more acreage to wheat, corn, and soybeans. Some 2 million acres of land covered by CRP contracts expired yesterday and now are available for crops. Also on Friday, Connor said ethanol demand is having some effect on food prices, but the ethanol inflation link is overstated. Connor says there are a complex set of factors at work on food prices, and it's not a simple equation of rising ethanol demand equals higher food prices. Connor says a bigger influence on food prices has been soaring oil prices, which feeds into processing, transportation, and even packaging. Senate Majority Whip Dick Durbin of Illinois on Friday told a food policy conference that he will try to attach a phase out of the current U.S. food safety program to the Farm Bill. Durbin's amendment would end the authority of all U.S. food safety agencies in 2 years. Durbin's amendment would allow 1 year to make plans for changes in the food safety system and another year to implement them. Durbin has the support of Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin. And President George Bush has sent to Congress legislation to implement the free trade deal with Peru. In a message to lawmakers, President Bush wrote, "The agreement will create significant new opportunities for American workers, farmers, ranchers, businesses, and consumers by opening new markets and eliminating barriers." Bush said approval of the agreement is in the national interest. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. What a wild afternoon we had Saturday coming back from Palatine near Chicago, Illinois. Steve Parker, who's the videographer that makes me look good on television, suggested that we ought to come straight south after pulling off at Gardner on Interstate 55. There's a sign there that says campus. Now, to us, that's kind of ironic because campus is where we were headed. This, of course, meant Campus, Illinois in Livingston County. And just south of campus, we ran into a couple of farmers who allowed us on the field. Bill Mashing was just finishing up lunch when we pulled into his driveway. He was sowing wheat. We thought we better pick up a little B-roll or video of somebody sowing wheat this fall because I know for certain we'll do a story with Daryl Good about the number of wheat acres that are put in the ground this fall. And we'll need some B-roll or video to cover that story. Bill, thanks much. I expect you'll be able to see your tractor and drill on the television very soon. Larry Nelson lives and farms, actually, not too far to the west of that mashing farm. He was combining soybeans Saturday afternoon. By the way, I hope, Larry, that you got out of the field at 5 o'clock as you were planning and went to celebrate your 34th, is that right, your 34th wedding anniversary. Congratulations on that one. And I do hope you got out of the field to spend a lovely evening with your wife. Larry allowed Steve Parker, who's the videographer, to ride around in the cab, one round anyway with him. He was moving awfully slow, so I did what I suggest you do most of the time during the show, is I took a little nap in the air condition in the van that afternoon, and then after that I pointed out to Steve Parker, the videographer, some of the green stem that was in the field and was slowing Larry down that afternoon. Now, sooner than we had done that, we saw the skies filled with smoke and decided we'd better go check that out. So we headed back to the east in Livingston County, and there was a field fire in a soybean field. All the volunteer firemen were out from Cayberry and Kempton and I don't know where else, but they had made the trip out thanks to them for putting that fire out. The soybean field was dry, of course. I don't really know what it was that backfired or how the fire got set. But for us, an interesting picture when the fire was done. There was a charred bean field that had been standing, and the only thing left on this blackened ground were the green stems. I'll try to put that photo in our newsletter this weekend, and you can get a look of that one, too. So if green stem's been a problem for you, this is one that'll show you how much green stem can be in a field. And we'll put that in the newsletter. You can subscribe to that newsletter on our website. The address is willag.org. Just hit subscribe. Now, up next, the U.S. Senate is debating the next version of the Farm Bill. The University of Illinois has weighed in with a way for farmers to see how different versions of the Farm Bill might impact them financially. I'll have more on an Excel spreadsheet that compares different versions of the 2007 commodity title of the Farm Bill. Usually, farmers don't have a good way to see how a new farm bill might impact potential government payments. The University of Illinois has solved this problem by putting together a simple-to-use Excel spreadsheet, says U of I Extension Ag economist Gary Schnittke.
Well, we're looking at some of the alternatives and have built a piece of software that allows farmers and others to look at how the various proposals would impact their payments. And right now, that software, which is a fast tool, compares what would the payments would be under the House bill to two proposals made by Durbin Brown. The Durbin Brown proposal is a revenue proposal that would base payments on what happens to insurance prices and state yields. So we compare that to the House bill, which looks a lot like the current farm bill with some changes to target prices, and it does give farmers an option to switch from a countercyclical payments based on target prices to countercyclical payments based on target revenue.
Again, the current version of the spreadsheet compares payments between the bill passed by the House and the Durbin Brown amendment offered in the Senate. Schnittke says as other farm bills are developed, those will be added to the tool that can be found on the University of Illinois FarmDoc website.
As we figure out what those bills mean, yes, we will. The big thing about that is that something we'll model it as soon as there's a written document that describes it. It's pretty hard to model these things if they haven't been described well enough to allow us to look at it.
Schnittke says the economics of the House version of the 2007 Farm Bill and the Durbin Brown Senate amendment are clearly laid out by the Excel spreadsheet Farm Bill Scenario Analyzer.
And the Durbin-Brown updates yields as they go through time, and it updates prices as they go through time. So the Durbin-Brown proposal would capture the fact that prices have risen. The House bill sets those target prices at pretty low levels compared to what we're looking at. So the House bill isn't going to make many payments unless prices, commodity prices, come back down to levels pre-2006. Our analysis would say that if corn prices stay above $2.35, Durbin Brown would make more payments than the House bill.
Farmers and others can download the spreadsheet from the FarmDoc website and insert their own numbers for the comparison. It will be updated as new policies are released. The address is www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Spend more time harvesting and less time pledging. WillPledge.org.
Well, it's a Monday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. On the line with us this afternoon, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the harvest season so far in East Central Illinois.
Oh, it's been a great one. Farmers are consistently coming in with 20 to 25, maybe even 30 bushels better than what they had expected based on plot tours and, pulling a couple of ears here and there. I don't know where it's all coming from, but it's definitely a pleasant surprise on the corn. The beans are just kind of average, so maybe a little bit above average, nothing great. A lot of 55 bushel beans, 48 to 63 has probably been a pretty good range, and so 55 is right in the midpoint. But the corn, 170 to 220, I'd say Champaign County is looking at something close. Probably not 200 bushel average for the whole county, but it's definitely going to be a record crop for Champaign County.
Two mountains on the ground there at the Andersons at this point. Have you started pile number three yet?
Not yet. We're waiting to see what the weather does here. If we can miss this rain, we'll probably start putting more out on the ground. But it sure feels like, even though we're probably getting two-thirds done around here in Champaign County, there's a lot of corn to the east of us that hasn't been cut yet, so there's still a fair amount of corn that still probably needs to come in yet.
What's the plan for moving it out?
We're going to have trains coming in November, December. It's almost impossible to get trains in October, so we don't even plan on that. We put it on the ground, and when the trains show up in November, December, basis is usually a little bit better by then, and that way we can get the piles picked up, moved inside, and go from there.
I suppose the corn is dry enough at this point that you really don't have to worry about the top piles too much, do you?
Yeah, we stopped drying corn about 10 days ago. It was amazing how quickly this corn dried. Of course, as hot and dry as it was during the month of August and then September, that corn really matured rapidly, and we were actually seeing some corn coming in out of the field at 12.5%, 13%.
Each of those piles about a million bushels in size, is that right?
Correct, yes. We've got 2.1 million on the ground right now with plans to maybe put as much as another 2 million on the ground before it's all over with.
And how much in the elevator?
The elevator will hold 12 million bushels.
And how much of that will be corn?
Let's see, probably close to 9 million this year.
Okay, and then what's your feeling about the basis as we work through the next 2 weeks?
Basis is starting to get better to the west and the south where they finished up harvest already, although I think there could still, I'm still not convinced that we won't see one more dip down in basis. There's still, we're switching over to beans now and the corn movement has slowed up a little bit, but I still think that last 20-25% of the corn harvest, we may see one more move down in the basis before we call it the low for the year.
Has everybody been amazed by how strong the corn market has been through the glut of this season?
People are comparing it to last year. We rallied in September, October, November, December last year in the face of the third biggest crop ever. So I think, and last year we credited the fact that we needed to buy more acres, and I think the market's doing the same thing. We're kind of discounting how big this year's crop is and already starting to look ahead to next year and realizing that we can't have corn too cheap, otherwise we'll see too many acres switch back into soybeans.
And the bids for the day?
Cash corn, 341, January, 367, cash beans, 953, January, 989, and new crop wheat, 654.
Thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons joining us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy about the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Police and the Champaign County Coroner's Office are poring over a site south of Sadorus in search of clues in the disappearance of Naomi Arnett.
County Sheriff's Police confirmed that volunteer searchers found human remains on the site yesterday morning, but there's been no positive identification. The 36-year-old Arnett was last seen at her Sedoras home on May 21st. The mother of seven children has since been the subject of a manhunt that culminated this weekend in a search conducted by a private volunteer group called Texas EquiSearch. It's still not clear whose body was found along the Vermilion River in Danville over the weekend. Coroner Peggy Johnson says autopsy results only reveal that the body is that of a male aged 40 or more. The body was found along a riverbank near the 100 block of Commercial Street. Johnson says there was also no sign of gunshot, fracture, or other trauma on the decomposed body. They're asking anyone with information to call police. State lawmakers are hearing story after story today about the fallout of Governor Rob Blagojevich's state budget cuts. The Illinois House is meeting today in Committee of the Whole to discuss more than $460 million in vetoes that Blagojevich made to the budget in August. The meeting is seen as a precursor to tomorrow's push in the House to override at least some of those vetoes. Dozens of people representing interest groups are at the Capitol to explain how the cuts will hurt their programs. The administration is not involved in the hearing today. Democrat Richard Young has dropped out as a candidate for Indiana governor. He's the state Senate minority leader and was the first Democrat to get into the race. But Young says he would have fundraising problems and didn't want to stand in the way of the two other announced candidates. A University of Illinois economist cautions against jumping to conclusions as a monthly gauge registers another decline. The Flash Index registered a reading of 104.8 for September. It's the first indication each month of how the state's economy is performing based on tax revenues. But the study's author, Fred Gertz, says any number above 100 still signifies economic growth. The number, though, is down from 106 the previous month and even higher readings earlier in the year. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. This is WILL Urbana on the line this afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the globe is Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the Midwest. A little cooler this morning than it has been over the past several days here in Champaign, Illinois. And a little cooler yet this afternoon, 68 degrees outside now.
Yeah, a lot of the coolness here is due to this frontal system that came through and the clouds and rain associated with it. However, that is going to be very brief as we see temperatures rapidly warming back up tomorrow, and that will continue this above normal temperature trend that we're in right now. We have been in here for the past week and will continue to be in it over the next couple weeks. So the bottom line is that for this first half of October, temperatures are going to be biased on the warm side here across the entire really central and eastern U.S.
We'll get back into sunny skies tomorrow after some light rainfall today?
Exactly, Todd, and we will see cloud cover decrease here, and skies will open up. In fact, most days this week, we'll see sunshine, and as a result, that will actually help produce some of the warmer than normal temperatures.
What are the most interesting weather features around the planet now?
Well, right now we're turning our attention here to South America and the onset of the rainy season across northern Brazil. Seems like there's some concern out there as to the lack of rain lately across areas of Brazil, whether that's some, big picture issue here or something to get overly concerned at. And at this time, we are not concerned. Typically, the monsoon or the onset of the rainy season across areas of like Mato Grosso do Sul, and Goiás there across the northern corn and bean belt in Brazil. Some years you see the start of the rainy season, by the middle to end of September. Other years you see it during the early to middle portion of October. And it looks like this year is going to be one of those years where the rainy season begins in October. And over the next couple weeks, we do see rain activity increasing across those areas. So we're not concerned here with any kind of late start here to the rainy season. And as a result, we think it's going to be a fairly timely start here as we go through the next couple of weeks.
Would that go for Argentina as well?
Yeah. In fact, Argentina has been downright wet, which is a total turnaround from back a few weeks ago where they were running significantly dry. They had about a week or so of very wet weather back 2 weeks ago, and now they're going to have another wet week this week as showers and thunderstorms develop across the region from now, looks like all the way through Saturday. So they'll continue to bolster soil moisture reserves, which is very favorable not only for winter wheat, but also for our imminent corn and soybean planting, which will get going here more so from a corn standpoint over the next several weeks.
The Australians would like a rainfall or two. Have they gotten it?
Not much here, Todd. And in fact, yeah, Australia continues to have its issues, especially across the eastern wheat belt, the areas of New South Wales, parts of Victoria, and South Australia. And looking ahead, there's some debate in the computer model guidance from a rainfall standpoint, especially longer term as we look out to next weekend and beyond. But our thinking is that with this kind of flip-flop in the model guidance, and we think that the trend of late will continue, so we are not forecasting any kind of significant rain event across those areas at this time.
And let's slide northward into China and check in on their harvest season.
Yeah, harvesting is progressing very rapidly across the region due to warm and fairly dry weather of late. In those areas of northeastern China, it does look like temperatures will be cooling down, but we don't see any kind of wet pattern that would bog down harvesting. And for that matter, down south into their winter wheat areas, it looks like a good start to the planting season in the Yellow and Yangtze River valleys of China.
We appreciate you being with us.
Well, my pleasure, Todd.
Thanks much. That's Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Monday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the pre-opening markets with your Director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey. You have a great afternoon, and be safe out there.